Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll have a spoiler-filled discussion about a movie we think you'll enjoy. I am joined by my sister Kay, and we have just finished watching Star Wars The Last Jedi on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. This, of course, being the second movie of the third trilogy, no matter which way you count it, of Star Wars. And just the other night, about two nights ago, we had rewatched The Force Awakens.
I'm glad we did.
Same here, because it reset the scene, and I mean, I enjoyed The Force Awakens, but I'd forgotten enough of a few of the plot points.
I had forgotten where Finn specifically ended.
Yes.
And I'm glad in terms of, because this picks up a little bit later, but with everybody kind of at the same status quo. So I'm glad I knew where Finn was.
Some time has elapsed, but in the span of maybe days, if that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they almost roll back a little on Finn and the Rebellion, but pick up where they left off with Luke and Rey. Because she seemed to still be handing him the lightsaber.
Yeah. Well, and I'm totally agreeing there. I'm just trying to think through on Finn and Poe and the Rebellion, because they're actively under attack and escaping, evacuating. And I'm trying to think.
No, you're right. You're right. It seemed like that had moved forward a little, but they hadn't really moved forward with Luke and Rey. There's a few timeline things that are a little weird.
Well, and I guess what it is at the end of The Force Awakens, we kind of establish where the Rebellion's at, and then Rey needs time to travel.
And that's what I'm thinking. They roll back from where that movie ended, but not from where we'd last seen the Rebellion and
such. Okay, that's a fair way to phrase it. Okay.
But we were talking as we watched the end of The Force Awakens the other night, how Han has died.
Yeah.
And when the Falcon lands, Chewie walks right past Leia. Doesn't say a thing, doesn't growl, nothing.
Yeah, I was shocked.
And Leia and Rey have a moment.
And they've never met before.
Exactly. She may have heard about Rey from Han.
Mm-hmm. And Poe.
And certainly from Finn.
Yeah.
But again, that was a misplayed moment.
Yeah.
And one that I don't know if I picked up on the first time I'd seen it back in the theater or not.
I picked up on that, and what I was reminded of as we watched it, and I think I was more aware of it the second time, was Finn, I mean, he knows in the beginning, he knows he's running away from the bad guys.
The First Order.
Thank you.
The new stormtrooper.
I was going to say, he's running away from the stormtroopers, but I'm out of terms because it's the Empire. They keep changing who the stormtroopers are pledging allegiance to.
Yeah.
But he knows who he's running away from, but he has no destination. He has no compass, really.
He doesn't have a direction, but he's so almost hell-bent on doing the right thing, but almost as a reaction to having been a stormtrooper.
Yes, he knows what he was doing was wrong, and he doesn't want to do what he was doing.
So almost an overcompensating aspect.
Yes, and I think he latches on to Rey, because she is doing the right thing from a pure and innate place, and he recognizes that he wants to be like her, and he's not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's really, Rey and Poe are the only real people he knows post-First Order.
Yes. And since we watched it, I decided to check out the library, the audiobook by Alan Dean Foster. Great book. And one of the things that's in the audiobook that I picked up on in the movie, but the audiobook is, and the book, because it's unabridged, is much clearer about, is there's a scene on the Millennium Falcon pretty early on where Finn sits down and is kind of hitting the buttons on the video chess thing with kind of the, I have no idea how this video game works. I kind of want to make it work. And it's an awkward thing and can't figure out once he gets it on how to turn it off.
Well, yeah, he had stumbled against it, accidentally turned it on, was trying to shut it off in the movie.
Yeah, in the audiobook, Han is watching him do it and going, well, that's a weird kid, doesn't even know how to use the most basic of toys.
Yeah.
And it's there are several things like that in the book that just remind you that Finn was, as he says in the dialogue, taken from his family as a small child and just indoctrinated and programmed and trained from not infancy, but very young, and has no real world experience in all the things most of these characters are taking for granted.
Well, in this film, The Last Jedi, I don't feel that Finn was quite that fish out of water.
But Rose became his compass when he met her, and through her, he began to realize that he was still overlooking a vast portion of life and the world, and that being so focused on Rey was tunnel vision.
Absolutely, I agree. And I thought Rose brought a much needed, almost down to earthness about this.
Yeah.
With the story in her and her sister, particularly having seen her sister in the bombing run.
Yes.
You know, why did they join the rebellion? How did they get where they got and stuff like mm-hmm. that? It added a entry point into the story almost. Whereas for a lot of this stuff, you read one side as the good guys, the other side as the bad guys, very black and white, and of course they do this, why wouldn't they? But there's no real personal stakes at times.
For me, the previous trilogies were very high-level politics, very, in our modern terms, the Washington, D.C. and the United Nations-level characters.
Well, it's funny because that's one of the things I actually really enjoyed about the prequel trilogy. When we get to see the Chancellor kind of going up in the ranks, how he's manipulating things, mm-hmm. and a sense of motivation, which I think really filled in some of the blanks of the classic trilogy.
Mm-hmm. You know, understanding how the world was built.
Why was the Emperor the way he was?
Yes.
And here we have Supreme Leader Snoke or whatever for two movies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who this guy is, why he does what he does, how he got into power. You know, he had definite battle damage, it looked like, and I'm like, well, was he a resurrected emperor who fell and got, I don't know, fixed or whatever?
He's the closest we come, with the exception of the characters we know and love and have had before. He's the closest we come to the type of character we had in the previous two trilogies. We don't have the senators and the chancellors.
None of that.
All of that. This movie and the previous one, so I'll hazard to guess this trilogy, is focused on the man on the street.
Well, and I also took the scene at the end of this movie where the kid is telling the story to the other kids. The one kid's got the ring for the resistance.
I want the ring.
The ring with the little closing iris or whatever, I thought was brilliant. They ought to sell that. It would sell like hotcakes.
It would. I want the ring.
But I took that again as that man on the street kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that the next movie, I don't know the name of it. I don't know how much later it'll be set.
Mm-hmm.
I almost want it to be set a few years later, like almost 10, to where these kids have had time to grow up. And the rebellion really has built back up.
Well, and in the scenes right before that, they were assuring Poe, I believe, was the one being given the assurance specifically. You know, the rebellion has not died. The rebellion is still out there. You may have to look for it. You may not be aware of it, but it's alive in the hearts of the people.
Poe was interesting in this movie. I thought in the last one, there were a lot of times where he's just kind of out of sight, out of mind for a while. Is he dead? Is he not? Oh, he comes back. Geez, how convenient. And he comes back inexplicably there. Here, he's front and center the entire time. And it felt like the writers felt, well, we must give him a character arc.
Yes.
Oh, he's this hotshot, you know, blow things up kind of fighter pilot. He needs to learn that sometimes not fighting is the right choice and escaping is the right choice. And I felt they hit that just, they beat the drum too hard on that.
Yeah, well, and the admiral that did not tell him the plan.
Yeah, I thought that was a bad move. It's like she didn't trust him. But that had to be a learning moment for him, to where in the the base there at the end, when Luke is out there fighting, oh, he's giving us time to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the actor just overplayed the lines or what it was, but it felt not corny, but in that direction.
Yeah. And the thing is that there were other and I think better ways that the script could have done that. I was very disappointed that it took the loss of 20 or 24 transports for the admiral on the big ship to realize she could turn around and with minimal fuel and no real weapons to speak of, use her ship as a barrier to defend them against attack.
Yeah, the fact they weren't flying in the shadow of the bigger ship eluded me.
So there were quite a few logic stumbling blocks that I had.
There were also a number of moments in this film visually that I thought were very clear callbacks to the classic trilogy. When, I guess it was the Millennium Falcon breaks through after, you know, in that last planet, doing the underground chase or whatever through the caverns and stuff. And Chewie did some great flying there.
Yeah.
But that reminded me of when the Falcon flies out of the Sarlacc or whatever in first or second classic movie. I forget which.
There were aspects of flying through the caverns that reminded me of flying through the Death Star.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there was also a little aspect of when they were on the, I'll say horseback, but whatever those alien things were, that almost reminded me a little bit of the speeder bikes.
Yep.
On Endor, I guess it was.
I was torn between the speeder bikes and the pod racing.
For the pod racing, when the kid shouts out or whatever, you know, the Wahoo equivalent.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't that what Anakin did almost? I mean, it was not exact, but enough of those callbacks. And I don't object to those because there's an aspect where it's like, revel in the universe you're in.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel derivative or anything of that sort. And there are certain aspects where there are certain lines you just kind of expect to hear in a Star Wars film.
Yes.
I don't know that anywhere in here we got, I got a bad feeling about this.
No.
And this may be the first Star Wars movie we didn't get that.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt this had a lot of classic Star Wars aspects. You know, flying to get away, you got to break into the enemy base to go shut down the shields or the equivalent or something of that sort.
The casino. Some spins on it. The casino was the cantina.
Yeah, that's the equivalent.
Yeah.
To a degree, the track race or whatever was the equivalent of the pod race kind of a setup in the prequel trilogy. And there was an aspect of the vehicles they were using there at the end on that last planet where it reminded me of the pod racers.
Yes.
Rickety, falling apart.
Yes, off balance.
Yeah. Well, and this has more of the sensibility and look and feel of the classic trilogy than the polished chrome look of the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Now, the stark counterexample to that, of course, is Captain Phasma.
Yes.
The only female we have ever seen anywhere in the Empire, the First Order, or any of the sorts, and she's got this blinged up Star Wars Stormtrooper armor.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to say it's sexist, but, you know.
Yeah.
Not going to say it's not. And what I was reading the other night in the IMDb page for Force Awakens was apparently that was supposed to have been made from like a melted down Naboo fighter.
Oh, interesting concept.
The whole chrome kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of things that they put in there without a word of explanation or dialogue, like the in the Force Awakens, when Kylo puts the helmet down in the ashes.
Yeah.
It's the ashes of his fallen, you know, enemies or whatever. It's like, sure, we'll go with, I mean, whatever. You could.
In The Last Jedi, I felt at times, we are doing this or we are saying this in direct response to things we know the fans said after The Force Awakens.
Such as?
We will now address the topic of Rey's parents.
Well, they had set that up. They had to address that, and I felt the answer we got here was disappointing.
Beyond.
She's got this, you know, X-Wing, you know, fighter outfit or whatever, granted, there's crashed X-Wings. Of course, they could have just come by it. But there was, they were building something up there.
Well, we have in the Force dream, as I recall, is when it happened. We have the memory of her being handed off to somebody and the wheel come back for you and the ship taking off.
Yes.
So to then have the, your parents were, you know, they were just junk dealers. They died in the desert. You're a nobody who came from nobody.
I didn't take that as the true backstory. I took it as that's what Kylo was telling her to break her, essentially.
Yes.
But having nothing else to go on.
Yeah.
But there's also the question of why is she so strong in the Force?
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody else we've seen in these movies that is, for the most part, other than the classic Jedis, is a member of the Skywalker family.
Yeah.
And I don't think they did a good job. There's no backstory for a lot of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little frustrating. In what do we know about Poe other than he's in the Rebellion, he's a really good fighter pilot, and he's starting to become a leader.
He's enough of a gentleman. He introduced himself to Rey at the end of the second movie.
Yes, that's one of the things I liked about this better than the first. All the characters get to meet.
Yes, that cracked me up.
And if you think about it, it takes until the very end of the second movie to get the band together.
Yeah. This movie had a stronger sense of humor than the first one.
Absolutely, and almost a little overplayed.
Yes.
There were a couple of lines, particularly with Luke, that were a little more flippant than I think Luke would have done classically.
Do you feel the Force?
Yeah, do you feel the Force? Force is strong, you whap! It's like, no. Well, of course, when he's like, reach out, and she moves her arm forward, he's like, I didn't mean it literally. And he doesn't say that, but you can, the eye roll.
Yes. Yes.
So, and I appreciate that sense of humor to it.
Yeah, the great delivery there is what made that one work.
Yes. I think Mark Hamill did a great job with the material he was given.
Yeah.
I also think that Harrison Ford had as many lines in this film as Mark Hamill had last film. And Harrison Ford wasn't even in this film.
Yes. But, you know, Han was pretty well dealt with here.
He was. I wish we had seen the dice before. Yes,
me too. I was thinking that every time the dice came up here.
The other thing that was a little weird, and I maybe I'm reading too much into it, the way they handled it.
Chewbacca becoming a vegetarian?
Yes. Because at that point, we'd seen these little, I don't know, penguin-like creatures or whatever.
That's what I was going to call them.
And they seem like just native wildlife.
They do.
The very next day, we see adult versions of them as caretakers of the monastery.
See, I debated for quite a while. Are they adult versions? Are they not adult versions?
They look too much alike to not be adult versions.
Yeah, but then the little ones go off with Chewbacca and they start mimicking his growls in the ship.
Well, they practically, you know, infiltrate the Millennium Falcon. Yet there's no sign of them there when the Rebellion shows up.
Yes, I did think that was odd, because they were there for the flying through the caverns.
There was an aspect of them that reminded me of the Baby Groot kind of a, let's put a cute cuddly thing in there. And yeah. Again, no objection to that.
And BB-8 went missing for a little while towards the end, after he'd been covered with a box, and Rose and Finn get captured. And
we see him in the box with a, this isn't a good place to be sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they could have sold it better with him just kind of slowly going away and then rescuing them.
Well, and what got me about that was the, I mean, people online nicknamed it BB Hate. I don't know what the real name of the black robot was.
Oh, that's funny. Again, I thought they did with BB-8 just a fantastic job when... Oh. Yes. The firing thing won't work in Poe's ship, and the little, you know, prongs or whatever come out, and finally BB-8 just slams his head up against it.
Yes.
And when the shuttle bay or whatever gets blown up, and Poe and BB-8 get blown into the corridor, and BB-8's head essentially pops off, I'm like, well, that's not good. He's going to need fixing.
Yeah.
And he just pops it back on, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
That's a better design. R2 got the short end of the script.
He did.
Although, what little use he got, I thought was really good.
Yeah.
and the callback to, help us, Obi-Wan.
Yes.
Was really well done.
Yeah.
Not much use for 3PO, but he was in there and visible, so it's not like it felt like he was ignored or something.
Well, and I did like Leia telling 3PO to wipe that expression off his face.
Yeah. And I liked his, I'll try my best, kind of, it's, he's matured.
Yes, yes.
Anthony Daniels may be the only actor and character that's been in all 8 movies.
Yeah, because Anakin built him.
And I guess R2 would be the other, but I guess from an actor point of view.
Yeah.
It's interesting because we've now got these 8 films. There's Rogue One to slot in after the prequel trilogy, but before the classic trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be the Han Solo film that goes in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm presuming before Rogue One.
Yeah.
But it's gotten to where just the official canon has amounted to quite a bit versus just the couple of films it was initially.
Well, I felt Poe Dameron was dealt with better in The Force Awakens than The Last Jedi.
Yeah, I felt he regressed a little in terms of maturity, and it was too pronounced of a character arc for him.
Yeah, yeah. I think what they did with Finn in The Last Jedi, overall, it worked quite well, because they're continuing to expand his horizons, to introduce him to more people, and to show him, basically, Rey is not your only compass, etc. Yeah. But there at the end, there was a very awkward scene where he feels responsible for what's happened to Rose, and she's unconscious, getting medical help, and he's putting a blanket over her. And Rey doesn't know whether she should approach or not, because she has no idea what's happened between Finn and Rose.
I think she realizes there's something between those two, and she's happy about that.
She's happy, but she's trying to figure out, based on the huge running hug she got from him, I thought we had something special, and now I need to know what their something special is.
If Rose doesn't come back and play a prominent part in the next film, I'll be disappointed.
I agree. Yeah, because I think she has become Finn's only family, and Finn has become her only family.
To me, some of it's that, and some of it is everyone else is a war hero. You know what I mean? She's just a lowly mechanic or whatever.
Yes, who became a pilot partway through.
Yes, well, so did Finn. And when did Finn have time to learn how to fly things?
Well, Finn didn't actually seem to be piloting, is what I realized later. Rose was the one doing all the piloting.
Sure, when they're going to the planet. How about when they're flying out of the base in the skimmers?
Oh, yeah.
He's not doing a good job.
No, but he has his own skimmer. And she's telling him from the other skimmer what buttons to push and what to do.
Now, if they'd spent just 30 seconds, this is the gas, this is the brakes, this is the steering kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And he's like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I love about Finn is he's perfectly upfront about what a low-level stormtrooper he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you know where the controls for that is? I used to mop in there.
Yeah. He's fun, and he's trying to do the right thing. He fills the role of the wide-eyed, naive kid that mm-hmm. Luke was in, the classic trilogy, and that Anakin was at the beginning of mm-hmm. the prequel one.
Well, and reluctant hero doesn't quite describe him, because he doesn't want to be a hero. He's not trying to be a hero. I'm not sure he ever even steps fully into hero shoes, but if there's a hero next to him, he'll stand in support of that person and do whatever they need.
I think he's a classic reluctant hero. He doesn't want to do it, but he can't not.
I guess my thing is, when has he done anything solo?
That's part of what I think makes him the reluctant part of the hero.
Okay.
It's not his natural thing. It's not the go-to move for him.
Mm-hmm.
But then there at the end, when he's, they will come for us, they will save us, sort of a...
Yeah.
He stepped up.
Yeah, that's true. And that was a good moment for him.
I thought he has had the best arc in these films so far.
Yeah.
BB-8 being the other one.
Yes.
Because, again, they've added so much character, personality.
Mm-hmm.
The people behind all of the effects for that are just doing a phenomenal job.
The only Funko Pop I've gone out and bought, BB-8.
It's a great character.
Yeah.
And they've again done marvelous things, just both sometimes comedic, sometimes just with the sound effects too.
The amount of emotion and inflection they managed to get into those sound effects impresses me.
Yeah. So whatever time they spent on that, I think was well worth it.
Now, I will say the Supreme Leader's throne room, I guess.
That room or the Red Guards?
The room with the Red Guards. Yeah. Not a fan of that room.
One, it was never set up clearly what was that room. Why is it there? Why has it got such bland red walls? The Red Guys look to be the Imperial Guard or the Crimson Guard or whatever they were. They were the ones that were featured in the Crimson Empire series of miniseries Dark Horse did like 20 years ago. Brilliant stuff. Terrific, brilliant art too. But what I don't get is how is the First Order connected to or not connected to the Emperor and all of that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Because they've got the same stormtroopers, the same sort of weapons, the same same red guys in the suits sort of a deal.
Well, the crawler at the beginning of The Force Awakens said that the Republic and the Rebellion had kind of merged into one. And it sounded like the Empire and the First Order, it kind of merged into one. Or the First Order had risen from the ashes of the Empire.
Risen from the ashes from the Empire, and the Rebellion had become, had gotten the Republic back on its feet.
Okay.
But there's enough of the big picture type stuff missing.
Yeah.
It's funny because I watched a YouTube video once, and I might have shown it to you, where it was a documentary style look at the Star Wars done in universe with how, you know, Luke and Darth were related, how this is so, you know, conspiratorial. And it was take a, I don't want to say like an E behind the music kind of a deal, but you know what I mean?
But a Dateline type special?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A news-ish documentary that's almost conspiratorial at times.
Yeah.
But it painted a very humorous picture of the universe of how, you know, the Empire rose, this abuse of power, this happened, but this farm kid from nowhere who turned out to be only survivor of this sort of a massacre or whatever.
Yeah.
What are the odds?
Well, I'm trying to remember, I guess it was the end of the sixth movie, maybe. One of the movies ended with we need to achieve balance in the Force.
That was stuff from the prequel of the prophecy of the one who will achieve balance in the Force. At first it was thought to be Anakin, then it was thought to be Luke. Then when they weren't sure about Luke, maybe there's another, that's Leia. And it's looking like it's probably Rey.
See, I'm wondering... Well, I mean, does it have to be a single person, first of all? But
it doesn't, but if you think about the whole concept of balance in with the Force, when they were first prophesizing and talking about all of that, you had a Jedi army.
Yes.
Why do you want balance?
Yeah.
You really want that many Sith floating about?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I want the side of good to have power.
Yeah.
So that whole concept I thought was a little...
Yeah, I mean, Rey seems to think that she can... achieve balance within Kylo Ren.
I think she's wrong. I'm sure that's what's going to turn out to happen at the end of the next movie.
I'm not a fan of how the character Kylo Ren has been written.
I agree. I thought he was better this film than the last.
Yes.
Not that that's hard, but I'm almost wondering if he's going to go kind of the Darth Vader route and he gets redeemed at his point of death or whatever in the next film. Because he's the big bad guy.
Yeah. Well, he had a moment where he tipped towards the light.
When he took out Snoke?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, that's certainly a way to read it.
He was unwilling to kill Rey.
He was more willing to kill the person who was had power over him.
True.
He was using this as an opportunity, potentially, to move up in rank.
True.
I think it could be read both ways legitimately.
See, this is why I got the audiobook for the last one. This is why I'm going to look and see if there's a novelization of this one. The authors, they put in so many things, like with the game console.
They give enough color commentary, essentially.
Yeah.
But if you look at Kylo's comments to Rey after Snoke is dead, we can rule together.
Yeah, but that was after the battle was over and after, I want to say, cooler, calmer heads were prevailing. You know what I mean? He seemed to have had a shift in thinking between the battle and talking to her.
I'm not sure, because I don't think he had... Had he the time, I don't think he was stupid enough to tell her, okay, now bow before me.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah. But let's fight these other people as a team first. Yeah. The breaking of the lightsaber in that scene was very interesting.
I thought so, too.
Because we now have, you know, she's got no lightsaber.
She has two halves of a lightsaber.
Doesn't do her any good.
Yeah.
Although you would think, although at that point, she had come back and drawn off the TIE fighters. So they would have, Leia and stuff would have thought that that's who dropped Luke off.
Mm, yeah.
She never saw Luke there. So she doesn't know that he was there with what looked to be the same lightsaber she had on her.
Yeah.
Actually, she wouldn't have had it at that point. It was already destroyed.
Yeah.
She'd have had the parts. Getting to where there's so much of this to keep track of. And again, 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
But it never felt like there was a lull where it's like, okay, get it moving.
Yeah, I was going to say it was a good, kept, well-paced 2.5 hours. Yeah.
The pacing was good. They had enough characters to kind of bounce between without feeling fragmented or like we were never leaving one character.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the general with the H name that...
Hux.
Yes.
That was the other humorous part. I've got a message for General Hux. I'll hold. No, General Hux with an H.
I'm still holding.
I thought that was pretty funny. A little over the top, but...
But a great stall technique.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. But he and Kylo Ren were clearly, you know, the two chosen ones battling between each other for supremacy with the Supreme Leader.
Well, just like it was Darth and whichever Admiral... It was at the time.
Yeah.
The thing that I thought would have been funny for them to do when opposed in the single X-Wing there, facing this big destroyer or whatever, because he was clearly waiting for something to ramp up.
Uh-huh.
It seemed like his engines, because he was kind of gunning the engines and then going to fly forward. I would have liked, it's like, it's one X-Wing. He can't even hit us from that range. And then have him blip almost right on top of them, shoot the hell out of the bridge, and then, you know.
Yeah.
But again, the whole skim, take out the guns for the bombers to make the run.
Yes.
They had a lot, I think, better ship battles here. And it was more, realistic isn't the right word, but not like this planet-sized star killer kind of a thing.
Yes.
It was more relatable size or whatever.
Yeah.
And it felt like we were following a through line of the battle.
Yeah.
Versus... the big picture of the war.
Because
there were a few things with the Planet Killer Base or whatever, Star Killer Base, whatever the hell it was, where it's like, is it a big laser thing or did they shoot missiles out?
Yeah.
Because at first it looked like a big laser kind of a thing, planet-sized lightsaber almost, or blaster. But then when it was hitting the planets, it seemed to be missiles.
Yeah.
Here, you don't have that kind of a problem. Granted, you get the big gun they put down there or whatever, but... It's like, well, why wouldn't you make one that you could land on a planet? And it looked like it took some effort to do that, too.
Yes, yes. And we had the stormtroopers finishing setup there at the end.
Well, and how it then planted the legs to brace itself, little things like that. Mm-hmm. I think they could have sold the planet having like a sulfur crust or whatever much better.
Yes.
They made a comment to it, but at first the guy's walking out and there's a red trace. I'm like, is he bleeding?
That was my thought, too. Yeah.
It just... There are a few places that I think things could have been a little clearer.
Yeah.
But overall, it was a really fun film. It felt Star Wars-y.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a better film and a more enjoyable film than The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a notch above Rogue One.
Rogue One, I think, had challenges going in because you kind of know it's going to end on a not-so-good note. This is the mission that everybody dies in sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Whereas here, we obliterated most of the resistance, you know, enough that the entire resistance could fit on the Millennium Falcon with plenty of space to spare. And there was no clear sense of what do they have to pick up? I mean, at the end of this, there was a sense of where the this movie had to start at the end of the last one.
Mm-hmm.
You had to have Luke and Rey carry on with that. You got to find out what's going on with Finn, Poe, etc.
Yeah.
In a very clear, well, is Finn going to live? Is he not? You know.
Mm-hmm.
Here they end with they're flying off to somewhere.
Mm-hmm. We've sent a distress signal to... That
nobody answered.
Yeah.
So they've got no particular destination, no particular ticking clock of we've got to rescue this or we've got to stop this or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives them a fairly clear slate as to where they can go in the third and final movie of the trilogy.
And Rey is the only known active Jedi, if you can call her that.
I would not call her a Jedi, but she's Force-powered.
Yes.
I think she will specifically not be a Jedi.
Yeah.
Although it's hard to say because Luke was saying, I will not be the last Jedi, so maybe she will be. It kind of runs counter to the name of the movie, unless it's she is the last Jedi. It's just odd to have a movie focusing on an older Luke Skywalker called The Last Jedi, and that's not him as the title character, even though he's top billed.
Details.
Stranger things have happened. So I'm, again, curious what they're going to do with the next film in the trilogy. Also curious about the Han Solo film. I think mm-hmm. they've got a Boba Fett, and they're probably going to keep doing Star Wars films until they stop working.
Yeah.
Which is cool if they've got good stories to tell and a way to not necessarily expand the universe, but stories that feel they need telling.
Yeah. Well, I like the everyman approach, but like I say, I think Poe was more interesting in the previous film. I understand the desire to give him a character arc. I just don't think they chose a good character arc for him here.
I almost would have liked it to have been he's a really good fighter who's tired of fighting.
Yes.
And a little afraid that he really enjoys it.
Yes.
That, I think, would have been a better internal struggle for him
mm-hmm.
than, and maybe him wanting to be a leader, than him needing to get forced down the path.
Yeah.
Because he seemed to be a bit of a natural leader.
Yes. Yes.
So for them to almost go with the theory that he's not,
yeah.
that ran a little counter.
Yeah. In The Force Awakens, he definitely struck me as a natural leader, a people person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the next film, which unfortunately means I have a long wait.
Not sure when the next one comes out. Han Solo should be out as we record this almost any time now, I think. It's coming out sometime this year.
Yeah, I was thinking the end of this year. I thought they were December releases.
They've gone to December. I was thinking they'd still done May 1, so you're right. So we got a little bit of a wait for that, and then a following... well, this was 2017, so 2018 would be the off, and with Han Solo, and then 2019, yeah.
So a little bit of a wait.
It's nothing compared to how it was for a while.
That's true.
These things are coming out faster than either of the other trilogies, I think. Certainly faster than the original. And certainly way faster between the gap between the original and the prequel trilogy.
Yes, very
true.
Or
the prequel trilogy and this set of movies.
Very true, very true.
And again, they're doing good stuff. They're capturing the heart and soul of the franchise, which is really about all you can ask for.
Yeah.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.